I haven't done as much maybe as I should have on the mine disaster. But did you see the article? Oh, it came out about a week later. They said the guy, these guys could have walked out. I don't understand exactly the ups and downs of that, but they said if they had known it was safe, they could have walked out. And it seems to me like it wouldn't be that hard. Let's say you have a one-inch pipe. Surely you can have a one-inch steel pipe that is going to be stronger than any cave-in. I don't guess it would work in an earthquake. I mean, if you've got a pipe that's running through the ground and the earth shifts, yeah, you're probably going to cut that pipe up. But if it's just a cave-in, surely a one-inch steel pipe can handle tons of pressure from rocks or whatever being on it. So for all these men needed, they could have saved the 11 lives if they just had a telephone on either end that was secured with a little metal pipe. It seems like it would be real damn easy to do, even if they're 5 miles under the ground. Can't they come up with 5 miles of pipe? So anyway, that's one issue over there, that they could have walked right out, but they just didn't know it was safe, so they did what they apparently are supposed to do, and that's to wait for rescuers. Well, we see how that turned out. But what is really striking about that is the miners, they've got the same attitude. Don't take me wrong here. This is going to piss some people off, but they have the same attitude as some military families. I heard them on CNN, maybe it was on Larry King, but they were saying, we don't fault the mining company. The mining company is a good mining company. It's a good company. They care about us. We don't fault them. We're not going to sue them. We understand mining's a tough business. We know it's a horrible, shitty, incredibly bad job, but it's in our blood. I'm a miner because my dad was a miner, and he was a miner because his dad was a miner, and that's what we do. We're strong men. We go under the ground, and we dig the coal, and we understand that every time we climb down there that we might not ever come out alive, and I'm okay with that. My family's okay with that, and we understand that in Western Pennsylvania and or Western West Virginia and in Pennsylvania, wherever the coal is, that just we just accept that now and then shit's going to happen, and we're okay with that. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with you people? Didn't we just explain it for the cost of what can a metal pipe cost? $1 a foot? So, you know, for $10,000, they could have had telephones running into the mine to explain to these people, it's okay, just come right out. Or, hell, you know, maybe if not a one-inch pipe, a three-inch pipe with the extra 2 inches, maybe they could have pumped oxygen down there. Or, I don't know, there just seems like there's so much they could have done. And like Randy Rhodes said, this company had 200 and something, 205, I think, infractions, safety violations in the last year. And the miners say, well, that's okay. It's a good company, and we like being miners, and we're not mad at the mining company. Just like the military families, you know, I can understand a military family. Like, well, obviously, 9/11. We're going to Afghanistan. We're going to take these bastards out. That's going to happen. Nothing was going to stop that. And I can understand someone, you know, going to lose their life to avenge America's honor or something. Just like if you're in a battle, you know, an actual firefight, if someone says, we have to charge that machine gun to take the hill or whatever, and so you 20 men, I want you to charge that machine gun and say half of them die. Well, you know, see, I can sort of understand that too. Somehow in war you get your adrenaline going and you got your buddies with you and they're all saying, we can do this, and by God, here we go. But how do you sacrifice your life to make Bush richer? That's the part I don't get. And military families, they are so committed to the mission and the this and the that they leave their common sense at home. And that's hard for me to understand. Just like these miners, the miners are happy with the amount of protection they have in those mines. Just like I assume most military families are fine with whatever changing reason Bush gives for why we have to be over there. They're okay with it. And it's so boggling. What in the world causes a man to lose his common sense, his logic, and doesn't mind dying for a cause that by now they have to know is false? They have to know there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but Bush sent them there anyway, and they have to know where that all that oil is going somewhere. It's certainly not going to the Iraqi people, who are paying 10 times more for gasoline now. How do you give up your common sense? How do you divorce yourself from all reality and then put your life on the line for something that's just not true? What is it about miners and soldiers that makes them react with no regard to logic or even the desire to come home to their families at the end of a day. They're okay if they don't make it back. Every time we hear about a dead soldier and say, we're proud of him, he died doing what he wanted to do. Well, don't you think he would like to do what he wanted to do and come home? That always seems to be left out of the equation. That's okay. He died doing what he loved. Well, if I get killed doing the radio show here, I'm not happy about it. I'm going to be downright pissed. But for some reason, certain mindsets grab hold of a man, and you just say, it's okay, kill me, I don't mind. I must not be like the others.
Time to discover Lunesta, a sleep aid that can give you and your restless mind the sleep you need. Lunesta helps most people sleep all through the night and works quickly, so take it right before bed. Lunesta is non-narcotic and approved for long-term use. Of course, do not use sleep medicines for extended periods without first talking to your doctor. Be sure you have at least 8 hours to devote to sleep before becoming active. Until you know how you'll react to Lunesta, you should not drive or operate machinery. Avoid taking Lunesta with alcohol. Most sleep medicines carry some risk of dependency. Side effects may include unpleasant taste, headache, drowsiness, and dizziness. Ready to catch a great night's sleep? Just climb into bed and leave the rest to Lunesta.
Apparently, we live in such a litigious society in America today that you have to be warned ahead of time that if you take a sleeping pill, you might get drowsy. That's just crazy.
My little daughter loves to ride to the airport with me. She says to me so often, Daddy, you just go over and over and over again. And so one of the ways she consoles herself in the fact that her daddy has to be away so much is to ride to the airport whenever I'm going in or coming back into town or going out of town. And she can do it if she isn't in school. And as we pass on the expressway going to the airport in Atlanta, we pass by what is known as Fun Town. Now, this is an amusement center where little children go to play and where they go for recreation, something like Disneyland and something like the very fine amusement centers across the country for young people. And as we pass Fun Town so often in the car, she would look over to me and say, Daddy, I want to go to Fun Town. Well, I could always evade the question when we were going by in the automobile because we were passing by and I could jump to another subject. And I didn't want to have to tell my little daughter that she couldn't go to Fun Town because of the color of her skin. But then the other day we were at home and like most children, she likes to look at television, and she was looking at television, and they were advertising Fun Town, and she ran downstairs and said, Daddy, you know, I've been telling you I want to go to Fun Town, and they were just talking about Fun Town on the television, and I want you to take me to Fun Town. And oh, I stood there speechless. How could I explain to a little six-year-old girl that she couldn't go to Fun Town because she was colored? I had been speaking across the country talking about segregation and discrimination, and I thought I could answer most of the questions that came up, but I was speechless for the moment. I didn't know how to explain it. Then I said to myself, I've got to face this problem once and for all. And I took a call over. My wife was sitting on the other side of the table, and I took my little daughter and told her to have a seat on my knees. And she jumped up in my lap, and I looked at her and I said, Yolanda, we have a problem. I said, you know, some people don't do the right things, and they are misguided. And so they have developed a system where white people go certain places and colored people go certain places. And I said, they have Fun Town like that. so that they don't allow colored children to go to Funtown. And then I looked at her at that point because I didn't want her to develop a sense of bitterness. I didn't want her to grow up with a sense of hatred and bitterness in her heart. And so I had to rush on and say, but now all white people aren't like this. There are some white people right here in Atlanta who would like for you to go to Fun Town. And there are some all over the country who are right on this issue. Still there are those who have been misguided. Then I looked down into her eyes. And I said to her at that point, and I saw tears flowing from my eyes at that point, I said, Yoki, even though you can't go to Fun Town, I want you to know that you are as good as anybody who goes into Fun Town. And I want you to know, Yoki, that some of us I'm working hard every day to get Fun Town open and to get many other places open. And I say to you that in the not too distant future, Fun Town and every other town will be open to all of God's children because we're going to work for it.
Here's another story. Bush is so crooked. It's a story about the cost of gasoline in Iraq. It says regular gasoline used to be 5 cents because it was subsidized, I assume, by Saddam. Now, regular gas is 27 cents, and they say by the end of 2006, it's going to be 54 cents. So the gas in Baghdad or in Iraq has gone up 10 times because Bush invaded. Now, check it out. Iraq's, what, the second biggest oil producer in the world? And Halliburton invades, and they upgrade all their equipment. And so the price has gone up 10 times because Halliburton showed up and raised the price of gas with all their fancy new pumps and pipelines. 10 times that's gone up. And you know Bush is stealing that money as big as Dallas. Premium gasoline used to be 13 cents. Now it's 68 cents. My good math says that's about a five-fold increase. It'd be $1.22 by the end of the year. So it went from 13 cents to $1.22. Again, 10 times the money. And it's their gas. It's their damn gas that Bush stole, and he's selling it back to him at 10 times the price they're used to paying. Crooked bastard. Diesel was 2.5 cents a gallon. Now it's 23 cents. There's 10 times. By the end of the year, it's going to be 45 cents. So it went from 2 cents to 45. 20 times more that Bush is stealing. Kerosene used to be a penny a gallon. Now it's 6 cents a gallon. It's going to be 31 cents, an increase of 20 times. And it's all going right in Bush's pocket, the crooked bastard. Cooking fuel, that's what they set their wives on fire with, was 17 cents. Now it's 41 cents. By the end of the year, 68 cents. So again, four times the money there. And it's all going in Bush's crooked pockets. Can you believe that? The oil-rich nation that used to pay 5 cents a gallon for gas is going to be paying 54 cents after the Halliburton upgrade. Bush is a crooked mother. I'll tell you what, he's stealing everywhere you look. Everywhere. The mortgage money is missing. The pension money is missing. The treasury money is missing. The old people's retirement money is missing. All that Enron money, that's all gone. All this money, $100 million a day that he's stealing, $130 million a day that he's stealing in Iraq. Where's all that money going, George? Boy, wouldn't you like to get a look at his tax returns? And you know, maybe President Clinton will do that, which is another one of them scary thoughts. No, not President Clinton. The idea that they're not going to let. If Hillary were to win this next election, that means she can legally open Bush's mail. She can legally listen to every phone call Bush makes. Can you believe that? They're not going to let her have that power. They're not going to let any Democrat have that power. Would somebody gamble with me on this? They're not going to let a Democrat win, either through Diebold or assassination. They're going to figure out some way to keep Republicans in power, because they will not do it. They will not let a Democrat have the power that Bush has stolen. I think we need to be worried about that, folks. We need to be worried big, big, big time.
Accuse all you Republicans, your avarice and greed. You ruin anybody if it gets you what you need. You tell a lie to get you by on that, you don't think twice. You call a thief a hero and a good man pays the price, yeah. Take a look at yourself.
Remember being a member of the Concerned Alumni of Princeton, but he bragged about it on his resume? When were you lying? That's simple enough. Are you lying now or were you lying then? And behind all this, you got to remember the Concerned Alumni of Princeton were really, you know, they had their maiden forms all in a twist because Princeton was admitting women. I always found the presence of women at college to be a good thing. Now, they didn't get around to having women at Princeton until when? And the boys all got mad? Does this draw a parallel with some of the stuff they say goes on in the all-male boarding schools in merry oldie England? And I don't mean to offend any of our listeners in the UK. But that kind of stuff is, it's axiomatic. What kind of guy bitches about girls coming to school? Oh, they're going to ruin it all now. We can't sit around and fart and scratch ourselves. The girls done come to school. That's what it boils down to, isn't it? Every time you hear, you know, the Citadel, Princeton, the He-Man Woman Haters Club, those fine old oak-paneled smoke-slickened rooms in the, where you sit in the overstuffed Chesterfield and you spit and you scratch yourself and, you know, no girls. Call me crazy. I like girls. A lot. I married one. I liked them so much I bought the company. Yeah.
God.
Remember Victor Kiam? The new Remington razor. I liked the razor so much I bought the damn company. I like women so much, I married one. And that pinch-faced, beady-eyed little freak with his wife wearing the upholstery from a 57 Edsel is upset because they let girls into Princeton. Of course, he was upset that they were letting those people, you know, the ones with the dark skin. Next thing you know, they'll be letting in the Pakistanis!
Senator Graham, I am not a bigot of any kind. Yeah, well, keep telling yourself that. Jesus. See, that's the way it works. You know, you're in the Klan, you don't like black people, you don't like Jewish people, you don't like Muslims, you don't like Indians, you don't like Eskimos. And most of all, you don't like the women's. Because, you know, now you want uppity. Now, there's all kinds of uppity. Everybody getting uppity against the white peoples. But, you know, I mean, in the long run, you know, that MLK, he was uppity. But there ain't nobody uppitier than the women's. I can't believe this is going on in the 21st freaking century. When do we get to the Star Trek part where everybody's equal and, you know, we're not warring on Earth anymore and, you know, we got and the biggest problem we got's the freaking Klingons, the Romulans.
That was a little snippet from the radio show of my good friend Bob Kincaid. You can catch his link on the page. And before that was a song by American Stranger, who y'all know over at Take Back the Media and Blah 3. And if I'm not mistaken, he wrote that, he sang it, he played all the instruments. How about that Stranger dude?
Yeah.
the Supreme Court, who are a bunch of whores. You know what I heard them say the other day? Maybe it's written down in one of these stacks here, but they said that the Supreme Court thought they would... They want to know how Bush thinks about a subject before they rule on it. I've never even heard of that before. Have you ever heard of that? When they're trying to decide if something's legal or not, they ask Bush what he thinks? What the fuck does Bush know about anything? All he's got is little personal philosophy, which has turned the corporations loose and fucked the poor. That's Bush's philosophy. Now, how are you going to look to him for guidance? Why does the Supreme Court look at anything outside for guidance? I mean, you figure if they're going to look at anything, why don't they look at national polls? Something like this assisted suicide deal. If 70% of the people want the right to end their own life if they're in too much pain or for whatever reason, then why not give the majority what they want? That seems to be a no-brainer. And if someone doesn't want to take their own life, then effing don't. But how horrible would it be to, you know, trap the other guy into living by Bush's religiously insane rules? But anyway, back to the story. The Dirty Whore Court. It says they rejected an appeal from an anti-war protester who was convicted of violating the boundaries of a restricted area established during a visit by Bush to Carolina in 2002. Brent Bercy had urged the justices to hear the appeal of a $500 fine he was assessed for entering the airport hangar in Columbia on October, it don't matter what day it was. Bercy's attorney said in court papers that he was exercising his free speech rights when he carried a megaphone and a placard reading "No More War for Oil, Don't Invade Iraq" into the restricted area. Bercy wanted the high court to limit the government's ability to expand restricted areas during presidential visits. Why won't the Democrats do anything about this? They won't even call Bush on it. You know, Bush stands there all day and says, oh, debate's good for the country. Healthy debate is what a democracy is all about. And of course, people have a right to be heard. And then he doesn't do any of that at all. And the Democrats say, well, that's okay. They don't have a problem with Bush standing there behind a podium every day saying, debate is a good thing. And then you say, well, let's debate. He says, no, I don't care what you say. Fuck you. They say that's what Bush does inside the White House. Have you heard this one? I don't know if this is new or old, but they say when they have it like a staff meeting, say there's 20 people in the room, and the president says, I think we should do it this way. What do you all think? And someone piped up and said, well, Mr. President, I don't think that's a good idea. And he said, that's because you're a stupid motherfucker. This is what the president says with witnesses to someone, to a subordinate in a meeting. Now, can you believe that? The snot-nosed little bastard. He's got the temperament of a 9-year-old. And he's calling people motherfucker in the middle of their meeting. An official meeting of, you know, they went, oh, Reagan never took his jacket off in the Oval Office because it was so sacred. You know, and then here's Bush screaming mother effer at some kid. And then, of course, when the president calls you a stupid motherfucker in front of all the people you work with, you're not going to object next time when he says, I think we ought to invade Iraq. That's a good idea, Mr. President. Boy, you came up with another sure winner there. We really like that idea, Mr. President. And if you disagree, you get retired or you get fired or you're like Colin Powell, get locked out of the room. Can you believe they plan wars without involving the Secretary of State? Well, at some point they did, but I don't know if it was before or after, but they just shut Powell out of the loop. The Secretary of State, not in the loop. Go figure, because he wasn't enough of a yes man. Of course, he was enough of a yes man to go to the UN and lie. The lying bastard. Oh, and also that a week or so ago, that Hugh Thompson fella, the hero from the Stop the My Lai Massacre in Vietnam, if you read that whole story, and you should have, you should read everything that Robert Perry writes. But in that story, they explain how Powell, when he got, they put Powell in charge of investigating it, and he never once talked to Thompson. He never talked to the guy who stopped the massacre. He asked someone else, is this true? And they said, no, sir, it didn't happen like that at all. And he said, oh, okay. So Powell went back to Washington and said, it was just a bunch of crap. They just made it up. It never happened. And they're all going, oh, okay. And Colin Powell never had to pay a price for that. Somehow in this Bush gang, he turned out to be the guy with credibility. Go figure. And then he blew all that when he lied us into Iraq. Colin, those 2,200 dead soldiers, how do you sleep at night? You just lied those men into their grave, but then again, they were glad to go. They don't mind. The parents, the families, the widows, the children, that's okay. It's what Dad wanted to do. We don't mind. He's gone, but it's okay. He died doing what he wanted to do. So we're happy. Some nutty shit in this world, isn't there?
During the Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito, tempers boiled Wednesday when Senator Ted Kennedy threatened to subpoena records of the controversial group Concerned Alumni of Princeton, and Chairman Arlen Specter had to slam his gavel twice before boredom was restored. After repeated attempts by the Democrats to draw Alito out on abortion and paint him as a racist, a visibly upset Republican Senator Lindsey Graham had this to say.
I am sorry that you've had to go through this. I am sorry that your family has had to sit here and listen to this.
He added, I wish I could quit you. During Senator Graham's apology, Martha Ann Baumgardner, Alito's wife, was so overcome with emotion she broke down in tears and left the hearing to get an abortion.
No!
Robertson apologized Thursday for the poor timing of his remarks that Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's stroke was a punishment from God, which means it's time for our weekend update Nutbird News Quiz. So, of course, you all know how this works. I read a quote to Amy, and she has to guess whether it was Pat Robertson addressing his flock or this man screaming into a plastic bag on Sixth Avenue. All right, let's do this. Here we go. Quote number one. Homosexuals want to come into churches and throw blood all around and try to give people AIDS and spit in the face of ministers.
All right, I'm going to say the crazy homeless man.
No, Pat Robertson, 1995. Quote number two. There are demons in my soup. There are monsters in my damn soup.
Pat Robertson at a White House prayer breakfast.
Nope, the homeless guy while in line at Tad's Steaks. Quote number three. Can a demon appear as a slanty-eyed, funny-looking creature? Of course it can.
That's the one I was thinking of, Pat Robertson.
Correct. That is P-Rob talking about how people who believe in UFOs should be stoned to death. Quote number four. You voted God out of your town. Now the terrorists will get you.
Okay, that was Pat Robertson like a month ago.
No, that was a trick question, Amy. That was actually the homeless guy quoting Pat Robertson to a group of pigeons. On Wednesday, New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg was made an honorary lesbian. Oh, that happened to me once.
Really?
Yeah.
When?
When I fell asleep on the F train.
Well, there you had it. Another edition of Bart Cop Radio is in the can. Boy, it's a good film once we get that issue in the can. It's like writing a term paper. I hate to write the term papers, but when you're done, it feels so good. And we like to feel the good. Hope you enjoyed this one. Hope you enjoyed the trip report. On the lesson back, I kind of figured out that the trip report never did end. But what happened when all that was done? We got on a plane and came home. So there you go. There's your big ending. Like to thank Tommy, like to thank Tally, like to thank those who called in. You know, if you call in and you have something to say, you know, we like jokes, we like impressions, We like trick callers, you know, like you call in to ask somebody else. That's always good. But if you call in and say, Bush is a weenie, or I like you, Bart, or I hate you, Bart, there's not a whole lot of value there. But if you call with something to say, we're going to get you right on. But most of all, got to thank the subscribers. You're the people paying the freight. Appreciate what you're doing. Thanks to those people who dropped the occasional check in the mail, because that does not belong to Caesar. I'll get to work on show 88. Oh, you might also be wondering, what happened to the little comedy clips? The DVR, whatever that's called, that blew up. So the cable man came out and disconnected it, and I couldn't get it hooked up again. So when the guy came by to wreck my computer today, he was able to hook up the sound. So now I have sound again on my TV. If I could just get somebody to come fix this damn computer. But I'm sure it'll all work out, because it always does. I'm going to drink one. I'm going to smoke one. I'm going to celebrate, because we got another show in the can. Just think, only 13 more shows to show 100. That'll be a head twister. This is Barton Knuckle Drag. I'm out of here.